Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Today at the cafe, I'm excited to have Mark Wilbur, CEO of Everything HR, here in the studio to discuss the dynamics and the responsibilities that fall on the shoulders of the HR professionals. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
I'm excited to have you here. I think we're going to have a great conversation and a lot of interest to the listeners. But before we get started, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your business?
Sure, absolutely. I'm president and CEO of Everything HR, a firm that's been around for a long, long time. It's been part of an consortium that goes back to even 1896. So we've been helping companies, thousands of companies, for many, many decades. Everything HR is a new twist. It fits all the technology needs of the HR professional of today, as you can imagine. And it's deep, deep experience helping people, you know, guide them through a lot of challenges today in the HR world, especially in California, which is like the Armageddon of HR.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of landmines here on the road to growth when it comes to HR, and we're certainly going to explore some of those. But I ask a question of all my guests before we get started. When we think about growing your business, what keeps you up at night?
The thing that keeps me up at night is actually protecting our members. Because it's, you know, if a member is asleep at the wheel for even a month, and especially in the state of California, they can get broadsided. And it's one of the things that really concerns me a lot about businesses. You know, I know we'll talk about dynamics here in a little bit, but it's the, you know, these things that pop up that if they aren't at the whistle go on it and ready to do it and be on top of it, they're going to get broadsided. They're going to get hurt. And the thing is, the state of California has no mercy for these companies. I mean, they're going to take them on and they're going to hurt them. They can hit them with fines and penalties and all sorts of fun things like that. And then, of course, you know, the today's world, if an employer makes a mistake, it's on the front page tomorrow, and then there's embarrassment and trying to deal with that because people have choices about where they want to work.
Right. Then they have a PR nightmare on their hands.
Absolutely.
And a crisis they have to deal with.
Yep.
You mentioned California law. If I'm not mistaken, in January of this year, maybe around the 19th or so, there was something like 55 new employment laws put into place that, like you said, a lot of people were probably not prepared for.
Yeah, there was over 2,500 pieces of legislation that dropped at the end of February, which is the go time for the legislation. So not all of those obviously are employment laws, that's for sure, but there's a boatload, and we're busy digging through that right now. As you can imagine, with the with the superpower right now that the Democrats hold in Sacramento, there's very limited ability for business to push back, to have a voice in the room, which is part of one of the things that we do.
Okay. Well, let's stay at the 30,000-foot level, sure, if you will, for a little bit. I mean, between what we're talking about, compliance laws, governing laws, a talent acquisition, training, employee compensation, employee screening, there are so many different aspects that fall into that HR bucket.
Yep.
Right? What are some of the trends and kind of the evolutions that you have seen and are seeing that the HR professionals really need to pay attention to coming up?
Well, this is a great question because, you know, to me, HR is so impacted by where the economy is. So, you know, if the economy is tanking like it was in 2008, you're dealing with issues around layoffs, you're dealing with issues around cutting back on training, you know, cutting back on, you know, safety. You wish companies didn't do that, but there's lots of records of that happening. You know, there's all sorts, but today, unemployment rate is, you know, bottomed out. I mean, it's about as low as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in that scenario, now it's a different issue. Now it's hard to find that needle in the haystack when you're looking for talent. So, you know, total rewards packages of how you put together a compensation package. And then, of course, you've got all this compliance stuff. You know, the dynamics decision is, you know, hurting companies around the independent contractor issue. You've got 1343, the new legislation that has passed regarding the new harassment prevention. Some people refer to it as the Weinstein bill, you know, because it's the reaction to that situation,
yeah, sure,
as terrible as it was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so somebody who just completed, say, harassment training for their entire organization in December in compliance with the old law still has to complete it in 2019. And there's new standards in this training. So we have all the certifications and are all good to go on that, but a lot of companies won't see that coming. And then all of a sudden, they're going to have to pay for it twice, you know, inside of 12 months, which is going to frustrate some of them, as you can imagine.
Sure. You mentioned the low unemployment rate, and certainly that makes finding the right people a little bit harder. There's a statistic that that I have found, and it says that 85% of American workforce is disengaged or unhappy in their job, which really has an impact on productivity. There's another stat that says that 34% of new hires actually quit within the first 90 days. So if we think about that in the cost to bring somebody on board and then the cost to replace and all that training, you know, are there some real costs that are associated that companies really face?
You know, the costs are multidimensional, and especially the higher the position is. You know, if it's somebody just a greeter at the front door, you know, that impact is not going to be as dramatic versus a, you know, service manager, you know, an executive manager who's driving a sales force or a C-level position. So the cost can be impacted in two different ways. One is turnover, or you can't find the right person, or having an open position for a while, you can lose clients. You know, if you're not providing the right kind of service and you can't fill that position, whether it's, you know, service failure, where literally you cannot deliver the service, or you're having to push it out or delay it because you don't have the right skills, or you could end up not only losing clients, but you could end up negatively impacting your entire environment within your own organization, which can be a real problem.
Right, an internal and external factor. I know that
huge.
And some of the I did come from the advertising agency world, and that was always a big concern of ours. We bring on a senior level executive, you introduce them to all the clients, they leave shortly after. There's a disruption in the business, and what kind of messages to send to our clients if we're having this kind of turnover? So you're right, there's a big impact. So that really kind of dovetails a little bit into about the hiring process.
Yeah.
You know, in my experience, people outside, I'll call it the HR professionals, that do get in, I've been called in to, you know, interview people in technology and marketing and accounting based on the senior level roles that I had played. You know, and I was inexperienced in interviewing some of these folks and had to do a lot of prep work and understanding.
Yeah.
But it seems like a lot of people just are not good at it. There's an art to it. And so if you think about hiring the right people, what's that hiring process? What's those steps that you could give the audience? So kind of here's an ABC that you need to do before you start hiring folks.
You know, there's several different steps that need to be put in place. But I'll tell you up front is that there has to be a process. Like, I'm a process nerd, if you will. I really am. I mean, I've built my entire career on defining and understanding process, because the devil is in the details always. And so you find, you know, people will set up a HR department to be the, you know, the front end on hiring, and maybe fold in one person from the group in which this person's going to actually be going to, or just a couple of people. Oh, and it'll be two of their best people, or, you know, within that group, but not really have defined and thought through having this person go through and understand what their experience is going to be like within that group. Because they might actually bring those people off of a shop floor and have them do the interview up front in maybe an office, and a vacant office, or in a conference room, or things like that, where it's kind of sterile, if you will. I would encourage people to, like, do the interview down where the work's going to get done.
Right.
In the group where the work's going to get done. Have them engage in that process. Then the other thing that just drives me crazy, and I'm sure you've seen this probably more times than either one of us want to admit, but the truth is, when the economy's booming and everybody's just flat out busy, people do not take the time with the CV, the resume in front of them, and really prepare themselves properly for an interview. I have literally seen hiring managers walk straight into an interview and be looking at the resume while they're walking in. And the look on their face, like, oh God, it's two or three pages long. What am I going to do while you're walking in and holding your hand out?
Sure.
So what's your name?
Yeah, you know what? And I have I've seen that happen. I actually had it happen to me many years ago, which I thought was really interesting. I was in for an interview, and the VP came in, and he looked at my resume, he put it down, and he says, "We're going to have a completely different conversation. Do you like baseball?" And I was like, "I'm sorry, what?" And the 45 minutes was about music and baseball. And after a while, I was like, I'm not going to get this job. So he doesn't even know who I am. So I went on. But another interesting thing happened to me when I was interviewing for a fractional job at one point in time is the CEO invited me to go to a huge brainstorming session.
Awesome.
And I was like, wow, you know, that was kind of interesting because I'd never had that.
Yeah.
And I literally spent 10 hours with the executive team. And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, well, do I say something? Because the advertising agencies were presenting all this brand stuff.
Right.
So do I sit here and be quiet and listen? And I was in it about 20 minutes. And I said, I can't keep quiet anymore. So I just jumped in and just made the assumption that they're going to hire me and I'm the guy. And at the end of the 10 hours, we went out to have some dinner. And she said, you know, show up tomorrow. We're going to sign a contract.
Yeah.
And she implemented that process for all senior executives after that. I had never run across a company that did that. But boy, it was really immersive and it was really interesting.
Well, it's engaging, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it puts you into the well right away. And you actually know what you're getting into right out of the gate.
Well, I got to see their personalities. They got to see me and listen to me. And so, you know, it wasn't that, let me ask you a question, see how you respond. I mean, it was real time. Yeah. And even when the agency guy got a little angst at me, and I just said to him, look, I'm your best friend because I come from that world, but I'm your worst enemy today, too, because I come from that world.
Right.
And that really resonated with the CEO.
You know, there's one point with that does resonate in my head, though, is that there's a lot of HR departments, if they don't have the confidence or if they don't have the calm, so to speak, if they're not in control and they don't feel like they're in much control, they're going to be very threatened by that process in the hiring process. They're going to feel like they're out of the loop. Or not in control of the individuals that they're bringing in. And that can, and I'm telling all of you HR executives that are, you know, listening in right now, you know, let go. Let that happen. That experience will inure benefits way down the road that are really qualitative and not necessarily measurable on day one.
Right. I mean, we're way off the discussion guide, but, you know, I find that and I'll just speak for myself, going in and having somebody look at my resume and so tell me how you went from this job to this job to this job. And they're just reading it. And I'm thinking to myself, you have no idea who I am. Did you? I sent you some videos. Did you watch the videos, watch me present and those kinds of things? And so to me, that process doesn't allow you to really get to know the individual.
Yeah.
And if the job description was mediocre at best, the person that's doing the interviewing that might be looking at the job description that they hadn't looked at for a long time, it's really guiding them in the wrong direction. So I'm going to segue and talk about job descriptions.
Perfect.
Most of the ones I see, and I have been guilty of it, and I'll say many years ago so you don't yell at me, but people go out and they say, okay, I need to hire a marketing guy, and I'm going to go look at my competitors, see what their job descriptions look like, and I'm just going to copy it, and off we go. But there's got to be a process that really define and make it a tool versus just a guideline.
You know, and I really had my face rubbed in this area when the recession hit in 2008. This became very evident, very clear to me, because there were layoffs going on anywhere, right? I mean, it just seemed like everybody, half the planet was getting laid off.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the problem is the work doesn't go away. That's what nobody ever tells you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like the work went away. So you end up with, you know, Joe, who had one, you know, hat he had on before, is suddenly wearing three or four hats, right? And then the economy starts improving, 2010, 2012, 17, and so on and so forth. Here we are today. Most of those people are still there, and now they still have six or seven hats on.
Right.
Right? So the job descriptions, I would argue that most job descriptions out in the marketplace today, if they were written pre-2015, are probably very outdated, because technology has also mashed up some of these positions too and allowed people to wear multiple hats. Two things that come out about it is that, one, you can copy a job description for what I would call like starter positions, early on positions, a receptionist, an assistant, you know, or and even some machinist type jobs, you know, like certain areas of production or manufacturing where it is very defined, it's very crystal clear what the job role and responsibilities are. Sure. Okay, you can do that, roll those. But most of the people, for most of the expensive hires and things like that, these people wear multiple hats. You know, they're going to have some HR responsibilities. They're going to have some executive leadership responsibilities. They're going to have some P&L responsibilities, some ROI issues. I mean, they're going to have all sorts of different things. And I guarantee you that probably if you look at the job description and you handed it to them after they've been in their job for a couple of years, they would laugh. Most people would laugh if you handed them in a job description. It's like, hey, is this your job?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, one of the things that, you know, when you think about the annual review, I'll call it, you bring your employee in, you give them your performance. But I can't recall doing it, number one, or watching people do it, or having it even done to me, where they pulled out the job description and said, hey, let's see if it even matches what you're doing today. Yeah. I mean, that would seem to be just a normal process that, right. that organizations should implement. Does the job still match the description?
Yeah.
And so, again, we tend not to think about, once we get in that rut, right, we're just doing the job, we're not thinking about what the guidelines were for it. And ultimately, to your point, we're wearing multiple hats, maybe things are slipping through the cracks, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, is I've actually asked senior HR executives why they don't do this more often, and a lot of them are afraid that people ask for more money. I know that sounds silly, but you know, if I'm paying you $100 to do X, but I get the thing back that says you do X, Y, and Z, you know, then the person, it starts getting them thinking, hey, you know, I really should be paid more because I'm doing more now. That was one lame excuse that I heard one time. Yeah. I think if you make it as part of your annual review and you fold it into their position file, you know, their HR file, I think it then becomes a more of an operative document at that point and actually a lot more valuable. It also opens the employer up to lawsuits as well if they don't have that job description updated.
That's a great point.
Because if you have them doing these two items, but their responsibilities are X, and then you terminate them, but they've been doing more or less, they're gonna look to those things. Those things are discoverable items. So it can get dicey if you're not managing the job description as well.
Okay. All right. So let's segue again. We started talking about this in the very beginning about some of the new California laws, and one of them, I believe it is called the Dynamex decision. Yeah. And really, it's an impact on 1099 contractors. Most of my life, I have been in and out of that 1099 contract role. I've also hired a lot of folks.
Yeah.
But now with these new laws, it's scary.
Yeah.
So let's explore this, maybe break it down for people to truly understand, you know, what that smell test is that they need to go through.
So for anybody listening today, you're not alone if you have never heard of this before. Dynamex is a decision. We refer to it as legislation from the bench. And what that means is that the Supreme Court of California made a decision in this court case to change the rules around qualifications for being an independent contractor. That doesn't happen very often, where a court case literally takes off the table the old way of doing something and puts a new way of doing it. It's referred to as legislating from the bench. And the problem is that most people haven't heard of it. If you think about normal everyday legislation, it gets floated with a trial balloon. There's feedback from the business community and others. Then it gets put together and more. And then there's redrafts. And then everybody knows about it by the time it passes. Okay. This one, the decision was made, thrown out there. It's law. And so, you know, right now we talked to the Department of Labor, and they are not going after companies at this moment for this because it's so brand new. It'd be a little unfair. But this court case now has created a 3-point test for qualifying as an independent contractor. I would comfortably, easily say that of the previous universe that qualified for an independent contractor in the past, 80% of those people are not going to qualify going forward.
And that really puts the company at risk at some point in time.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
Does it put the contractor at risk too, or is it really the onus fall on the company itself if they hire a 1099?
I think the biggest risk comes actually at the employer.
Okay.
Because certainly they're going to go after them from a classification issues, penalties and fines and so forth. In that case, there's also a downstream effect to the independent contractor. I think for a lot of them, though, sometimes it isn't even about the dough. It's more about the freedom to be able to work in different places.
Okay.
I mean, there's all sorts of things that broadside you. If I go from being an independent contractor and suddenly I'm an employee, I wouldn't qualify for certain things on the outside world where, you know, buying certain things as far as like services where you go in with your business license and you're buying those things because right. you have an independent contractor license. So it really has a broader impact to the independent contractor than just how is my paycheck looking coming from this company.
Okay. So let's, I think that I've been told it's called like the ABC test. So what are the kind of the three steps and where is the one that's the most dangerous?
Well, you know, if you'll indulge me, I'm just going to read the three because these are the three. So it's a new ABC test and it basically states that the hiring intern establishes that all three of these prongs must be present. The worker is free from the control and direction of the hirer in connection with the performance of the work, both under the contract for the performance of such work, and in fact, the worker performs work that is outside the usual course of the hiring entity's business. And lastly, the worker is customarily engaged in an independently established trade, occupation, or business of the same nature as the work performed in the hiring entity. So there's certain people that will qualify for these things, but you can see control and direction is a huge issue. Mm-hmm. It's a very debatable point. Now, some people have said, well, if I go out and make myself an LLC and I create, sure, all those kind of things help, but they're still going to go to that control and direction aspect. It's always been one of the bigger aspects in this area, but there used to be so many other ways that you could qualify as an independent contractor, and those things have just been taken off the table. There is some language. We are, as I was talking before the show, we're driving a coalition right now about trying to get some language added to this, especially because New Jersey actually has language very similar to this, except that on Part B there, if you're working outside of any of the places, so you're not working in any of the places of the entity that hired you, and you're working independently on the outside, maybe it's your own office, mm-hmm. your own home, it helps you find that exception. That would solve a major portion of this.
Okay.
So we're kind of hoping we're fighting that and trying to deal with it.
All right, fantastic. I'm actually getting the wave here. A couple minutes left. Is that all I've got? Oh, wow.
Boy, that went fast.
It went by really fast. So, where do I want to go? I'd like to get some advice, but let's use 1 minute of that to talk about millennials.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the workforce. There's a lot of opinions about who they are, what they do. What guidelines, in 60 seconds or less,
sure.
can you give the audience about the hiring of millennials?
You know, the millennials, you just got to understand that the mindset is a little different. They've, you know, a lot of them have lived on their phones. Technology, if you think about it, technology has been around them. They're, you know, first generation where technology was existing prior to birth. So from day one, they've been around technology, iPads, iPhones, whatever. So that's an interesting change because everything to them, if they see some paper-based thing or they see processes that are like old school, they just really don't get it. They'll look at you with this foggy look on their face like, why in God's name are we doing it this way? Now, you may have a perfectly justified reason. Just know that the millennials can have a gap there that they really don't know how to fill it up in between it. So they tend to look at job opportunities. Is the corporation socially responsible? They're more freely to get up and walk out and quit someplace if they find that they don't feel like the organization is being socially responsible. They don't feel as tethered. They sort of approach it as my skills are on loan attitude.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to take this job and I'm going to provide you my skills as well. But hey, you know what? I may find something cooler across the street next week and I'm out of here.
Sure, sure. I thought you were going to break into a song. You can take this job and shove it. But you didn't say that. So
right.
last, yep. we're going to be done. Two tips.
Yep.
What two things can you tell the audience that they need to do to make sure that their brand is healthy and can survive and thrive?
Yeah. So for me, for an HR executive specifically, focus in on actual understanding of measurements. Okay, get into the analytics. This is, I get asked all the time, how do I get to the C-suite? How do I get to the C-suite? Well, understand measurables and analytics, because that's what the rest of the C-suite's living on. So that's number one. And two is organizational people and process alignment, you know, and tying that to financial analytics so that you can streamline the organization, get rid of redundant processes, make yourself a better operating organization, actually process model these things. There's so many processes in HR that are outdated and can be readdressed and streamlined. That's the opportunity in front of HR executives today. And I really think, you know, we do this kind of stuff all day long. Happy to help out, and they can reach out to me.
All right, fantastic. So why don't you tell them how they can get a hold of you and reach you and connect with you?
Great. So you can reach me at markw@everythinghr.com. Of course, you can go to the website, everythinghr.com. You know, what do you do in HR? Well, it's in the name, everything. We pretty much are engaged in all of it. So
And they connect you with you on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, they can connect with you on LinkedIn as well.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation.
My pleasure.
I really enjoyed it, and I'm positive the listeners are going to get a lot out of it too. Thank you again for joining us at the cafe. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, view my show videos at theponzigroup.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn as well. You can also subscribe to our show at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com, or we are now on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Spreaker, and many other platforms, and coming soon to many, many other platforms around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.